Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing how clinicians can adapt their approach to help improve the care and treatment of culturally and linguistically diverse patients. My special guest is Associate Professor Rima Harrison, who is a Cancer Institute New South Wales Career Development Fellow from the Australian Institute of Health Innovation at Macquarie University. Associate Professor Harrison and her colleagues recently wrote about this topic in Insight Plus for World Patient Safety Day, which was marked on Sunday, the 17th of September, 2023. Associate Professor Harrison is with me now. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Associate Professor Harrison, before we talk about engaging culturally diverse patients appropriately, can you please tell our audience a little bit more about your background and how you came to write about this topic?
I'm a health system and services researcher. My background's in psychology. For the last 15 years, I've been exploring the psychological impact of involvement in medical errors, initially for clinicians and then also for patients and families. And through that work, I've come to understand how challenging it can be for patients in the general population to navigate the health system, to be listened to and to have person-centric care. And when you add that like kind of layer of cultural and linguistic disconcordance between patients and health professionals, and plus the other social and personal factors that are at play for migrants and those additional and new challenges for healthcare engagement that are introduced, there are often inequitable healthcare quality and outcomes. And so that became a real focus area of interest for me. Being from a CALB background and specifically speaking a language other than English, my father being a refugee from early childhood, I've had a particular passion for improving equity and outcomes for diverse communities and that find themselves in the health system with new and additional challenges.
And let's turn now to talking about patient harm. Drawing on your experience, what does patient harm look like in today's health system?
So, I mean, health systems internationally started to observe and collect patient data about preventable harm, so harm that occurs among patients because of the healthcare they receive, from about the 1980s and at scale from the 90s. And then if we look across the decades, you know, whilst health service provision has advanced and there are many examples of high quality care, there remains around 10% of patients who enter hospital experiencing some form of physical or psychological harm as a result of their care. And that figure hasn't really changed despite all of the advancement and progress that we've made in the health system. So examples of harm that are commonly reported, they include things like patients being given the wrong medication or dose, medications at the wrong time, healthcare-associated infections, missed or delayed care, less frequently examples of wrong site procedures, and underlying many instances of patient harm, there's a myriad of communication-based errors. And so evidence from kind of the UK, Australia, the US, several other countries, it shows that whilst cultural and linguistic profile of each of those nations differs, there's people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds are at increased exposure to preventable healthcare associated harms. So in a review of evidence that we conducted a few years ago, about more than 40 studies, we found that there were particular harms that were occurring more frequently for CALB communities. So medication errors, surgical errors and healthcare associated infections in particular. And then in Australian cancer services, where we've spent much of our time, our review of medical records of more than 600 people from CALB backgrounds across a couple of states in Australia revealed that around 30% of patients accessing those services were experiencing at least one physical or psychological harm as a result of entering the healthcare system. And so those rates are substantially higher than that 10% rate that we have for the general population.
And let's zoom in on patients from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds in Australia. We know that Australia is one of the most diverse countries in the world. What are the challenges that clinicians and health services face when trying to engage with these patients appropriately? And what does bad patient engagement look like?
Clinicians are at the front line of managing the systemic challenges that CALB communities face. So they're always in that position where they're having to try to address the fallout from the range of problems and the range of experiences that impact on patient care. So there are some resources available, but they're inconsistent and they're often restricted to language-based support primarily where there is resource available. So if you take, you know, interpreter services as an example, When an interpreter is used, fewer safety problems are associated with care, and we found that through our medical record review study as a consistent finding. But we know that interpreters are not always available, and our interviews with, you know, more than 50 clinicians across two Australian states have showed that whilst interpreter services can be scheduled for processes like taking consent, discussing clinical and complex information, accessing an interpreter for spontaneous conversation, for those kind of day-to-day chats that you might have with a patient in which they're talking about concerns in their healthcare or asking questions, accessing an interpreter in those situations is extremely challenging. And the reality is that clinicians often find themselves in a situation where they're choosing between providing care in a moment as best possible, or rescheduling or delaying care to await an interpreter. And that's a really tough choice. Similarly, you know, we look at patient education materials and we think, oh yeah, you know, they're developed, they're translated. It's actually not always the case, and it's not as simple as that in terms of healthcare engagement. So, you know, patient education materials are generally developed in English primarily, and then there's translation into some languages and often in shorter form than the original version. So you often have an inconsistent range of languages in which it's translated into, and then you actually don't have the full information available in another language. And the other issue around direct translation is that it doesn't always account for different message framing and perspectives that might make the education meaningful or effective for a particular cultural group. And so these types of challenges represent structural inequalities and the opportunity to engage in care. And so patients and families from CAL backgrounds don't have the full information. They don't have the opportunity to spontaneously raise questions and discuss aspects of their healthcare. And so the ultimate outcome of that is, you know, there's an absence of engagement. And that's not through clinicians not wanting to have engagement. That's through the challenge of actually trying to engage in a meaningful way in the moment. And so that's what bad engagement looks like. It's the absence of engagement or the opportunity to have an engagement when somebody would like to from either party. And in those situations, you have family and support people having to be ever present to safeguard loved ones and for clinicians to try to, you know, make the best of a difficult situation. And so those families and those support people are in the workforce and they're impacted by trying to take on that role. So although these are system and service challenges, clinicians are really tasked with managing the gaps. And that really represents a substantial challenge for them in the context of other matters in their work context.
And I'm wondering, how much consistency is there between the states and territories, between different health services, about the different services they offer for people who are from linguistically diverse backgrounds?
It was interesting. There are certain issues that do vary and certain issues that are fairly consistent. So when we looked at data, we compared between, for example, New South Wales and Victoria. I mean, we were in cancer services, so that, you know, there was the same kind of service. But we did find really consistent challenges around trying to use workarounds, really, to try to fill the gaps in care provision. And so certainly the consistency is around how clinicians take this on. The consistency is around the need for workarounds. The gaps are around not knowing who is in a community, not being able to identify people from CAL backgrounds in an effective and consistent way. You know, I mean, we conducted a medical record review. It took us 4 years and we're trying to identify people from patient records who are from CAL backgrounds. It's really challenging. And that's not something that clinicians are able to do on a quick and regular basis to identify their community and how to address their needs.
Let's turn now to best practice. Or what you'd like to see. What are some of those strategies that clinicians themselves and health services as a structure can adopt to help improve that engagement with people from these backgrounds?
In the course of our work, we've spoken to many clinicians who've devised a whole range of strategies that they've spoken to us about, and that can really help to improve engagement with CAL communities in the moment. So we're talking about in the absence of, you know, systemic changes and policy level changes. These are strategies that are kind of practical day-to-day stuff. And so these are helping clinicians to mitigate the immediate challenges. And then there's a whole set of higher level kind of strategies for system and government. And so I think the first point to note when thinking about strategies is that the CAL population is extremely heterogeneous. So, you know, a central starting point is trying to establish the nature of the CAL population for whom a service or a clinician is interacting with, and what that's going to mean for providing care and what that's going to mean in terms of engagement. So that curiosity to explore the population groups that engage with the service, and importantly, how being from a cow background in that particular way is influencing their healthcare engagement, because that will help you to think about what the appropriate strategies might be. So are communities impacted by the issue of language concordance or by health literacy or by migration stress or trauma? And then what are the supports needed to mitigate the impacts of their cultural and linguistic diversity on their healthcare engagement? So I think, you know, I'd start there with collaborating with community groups. It's a great first step towards identifying the support needs and then being able to have a few strategies up your sleeve when you're caught in an encounter without a lot of time to plan, because that's really the characteristics of those engagements that are really tricky and that sometimes go badly, even with the best intentions. So, I mean, we spoke to a range of a really diverse range of multicultural health teams distributed across Western Sydney, which is, you know, a really culturally diverse area. That was a few years ago. That was pre-COVID. And a clear strategy that underpins their successful clinical work was the use of community outreach, really firstly and foremost to kind of build trust and build an understanding between the population and the healthcare providers who are working in those communities about each other. And it also offered an opportunity at the same time to engage in preventive care and early interventions. So there's that mutual kind of gain in that activity. And so that community outreach at first might not actually be in health settings, actually going out into community spaces to deliver services, to provide an opportunity to connect and to get to know providers and for providers to get to know their communities. And then through those kinds of strategies, you might identify some key contacts that can give you some guidance and support as a community or consumer panel. And that might inform your activities, regardless of what kind of health service you're working within and what kind of specialty area you're in.
And what are some strategies that clinicians can adopt to improve engagement with people from these backgrounds?
Really, one of the immediate things is the use of visuals to invite communication or to communicate in order to kind of bridge the language or cultural gaps. So, I mean, it's not new in the sense that images have long been used in health communication for a range of groups. They have been used for multicultural health communities, but when we think about the resources out there, they might have actually been originally developed for a broader set of community who experience a range of communication gaps when they're trying to interact in healthcare. So, for example, you have resources like the Say Less, Show More resources from the Agency for Clinical Innovation in New South Wales. So those are some documents around various different aspects of the healthcare system, but there's also a set of tips on how to create your own visuals. And they don't have to be fancy. It's about getting the message across, inviting contribution for patients and families, and really tailoring it to be suitable for the particular communities in which you're working. And then, you know, thinking about interactions from a service perspective, you know, from health service point of view. So we provide a lot of patient education, a lot of information in many different formats. You know, you only have to go into any kind of healthcare service to engage with that. And sometimes, as I've said previously, we provide translation, but it's inconsistent. But it's also that the translation is often a direct translation of a piece of information that is framed with a particular cultural standpoint about health and wellness and accessing health systems. And that might be at odds with the communities or the cultural perspectives and standpoints of the people whom you're trying to engage with. And so it's not going to be effective necessarily just in a translated form. And so, you know, a few tips of trying to look at that information and think, well, firstly, you know, keeping information in plain English and brief. We know that that's it's so obvious, but it's so infrequently done. We did an observational study looking at information in, again, in cancer services in a hospital setting. And actually, very few resources were available and put, you know, up on the walls or in leaflets that were actually brief or in plain English. And so it's not necessarily always out there. And that's valuable not just for multicultural groups, you know, other people who have, you know, limited literacy or health literacy. It's a valuable approach more broadly. But then thinking about those community, you know, champions or leaders or panels that we've talked about earlier, you know, running the information by them and remunerating them, you know, for a small bit of time, but to take a look and give you some insight into how that information is going to be received. And it's not just about language. It's going, okay, what about the images? What about the colours and the numbers? Those things can be extremely significant in terms of the way that different cultural groups are going to receive information and whether they're going to be able to find that information of value and aligned with their perspectives. And so attention to those aspects of your communication as a service is going to help ensure that your communication is relevant to communities. And then the final one really around kind of government and policy, I think it's more about shifting our approach, you know, recognizing that Australia is a multicultural environment, that we have about 50% of the population who are, you know, coming from different whole range of different cultural and linguistic backgrounds. And rather than taking an approach of here are a set of guidelines and frameworks and materials for the general population, and then let's tailor, it's thinking, what is the population? And let's develop frameworks and guidelines and approaches that are actually relevant to the population needs for the communities that we are working with in the Australian health system, so that we're not having to keep going through this process of workarounds and tailoring and adapting, but we've actually got things that are fit for purpose in the outset.
And just one final point. You've talked about the patient harm that can stem from not engaging appropriately with people from different backgrounds. But putting that aside, there's also the issue of these people will feel even more isolated, even less part of the country and less part of the solution to their own healthcare.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, the common reaction to not feeling included is to withdraw. And, you know, when you are not invited into a conversation or you feel that the communication is set at a different standpoint to yourself, especially if you've been through conflict or you've had challenges getting to be in a place, it's really challenging to then speak up about that and to start to engage with something. And so people withdraw and people don't access healthcare. And that really has an impact not only for those individuals and not only for those communities, that has an impact for the broader health system. We have people presenting then with problematic health conditions, further advance, later in the process, poorer health outcomes, higher costs, and it's bad for the health system and it's bad for the population on the whole.
Associate Professor Harrison, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for your time.
My special guest has been Associate Professor Rima Harrison, who is a Cancer Institute New South Wales Career Development Fellow from the Australian Institute of Health Innovation at Macquarie University. You can read her article by clicking on the link in the description of this podcast. You can find more podcasts on our website on mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.